Welcome to another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. On today's show, we will be speaking with Francis DeLuca and Susan Myrick, both of the Civitas Institute, for another update on redistricting in the state and how things are just going. I mean, this has been a recurring issue. We've had them on a couple of times to kind of unpack this topic for us, which is a very layered topic. And they do a good job of really opening up a lot of those layers for us. Before we get to that segment, though, I want to talk about subscribing to the podcast. If you're not subscribed and you listen to the show, you're creating work for yourself by going and hunting it down on the Freedom Action Network website every day or every day where you want to go listen to it. What you can do is just subscribe to the show on your device, and that's an iPhone or an Android phone or a tablet or what have you, through Apple Podcasts if you're an iPhone user, or Podcast Addict or some other app if you're an Android user, and you'll get this show to your device automatically without having to come search us out, and you'll never miss an episode of What Matters in North Carolina. Now, that lets you listen into us, but we want to hear from you too, and the way to do that is on social media, on Facebook and Twitter. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter at What Matters NC. That's What Matters NC. Now, without any further delay, we will get to our segment with Francis DeLuca and Susan Myrick. So joining us now on What Matters is Francis DeLuca and Susan Myrick, both of the Civitas Institute, and they are going to be talking with us about the recent Supreme Court hearing on the Wisconsin redistricting case. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Francis.
This is Susan.
And so on October 3rd, which was yesterday for us, October 3rd, the Supreme Court heard arguments in an appeal of the Wisconsin redistricting case. And what had happened was the circuit court that oversees Wisconsin had ruled that the Wisconsin legislature unconstitutionally gerrymandered or redistrict was not legal, I guess
right.
is what you would say.
Right. And it's interesting, and to compare it to North Carolina, we're talking 2011 maps again. They're just like what we're going through here in North Carolina. It's taken 5 years to find those courts that would rule against maps.
And the problem here is, you know, we are used to cases where the courts say that because of race, because of one person, one vote, that the districts were not legal.
That's right.
This is a completely different kind of case.
It is.
This is a case claiming that a partisan legislature does not have the authority to redistrict in a partisan way.
Right, and which is completely different than anything we've ever heard before, because we've always understood that redistricting is a partisan matter, and it always has been.
And in fact, that it is a supremely legislative matter.
Right.
That before the show, we were talking, and redistricting has always been up to a legislature. The courts, except for where there is legislation concerning it, like the Voting Rights Act or like the one person, one vote, except for that, there is no legislation that affects this redistricting. In this case, saying that partisan redistricting is illegal, there's not a law out there. Right. There is a law that says if you can draw a minority district, you have to draw
That's right. That's exactly right. And we were also talking about in North Carolina, our Constitution tells us that this responsibility is up to the legislature. It doesn't mention the courts in redistricting at all.
And this has been something that the left and the Democrats have long wanted to try and get their hands into in terms of letting the courts do it. There also has always been a long effort among the left and to an extent Democrats to move redistricting out of elected officials' hands into unelected officials' hands. And that's why you hear these things about redistricting commissions or professional staff doing redistricting.
It's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's for over 200 plus years, redistricting has been the province of the legislature. And we are seeing an evolution where they're trying to take it out of elected officials' hands, which means it's out of the voters' hands.
Absolutely. It's adding. They want to add another layer of bureaucracy, which makes things even much more cloudy. Right now, we know who to blame. We know who to look to if we're not happy with something. But with a nonpartisan, and I do the air quotes with that, because in politics, there's nothing that's not political or partisan. It is partisan. And so to cover up who is actually drawing the districts, whether it be staff, which are usually appointed and hired by partisans, or nonpartisan commissions, which will be appointed by partisans, it all comes down to politics. And I think most people would prefer to have that one layer to point to and know what they're doing at all times.
In fact, redistricting is probably the most political thing any elected body does, is the redistricting aspect of their job. But in this case, the courts are trying to decide an issue where they have nothing to look to tell them how to decide it. So what's happened in this case, in the Wisconsin case, is some academics and some left-leaning people and some politicians who weren't in power have come up with what they call a measure of efficiency. Is the redistricting plan efficient? In other words, does it get as close to 50-50 as you possibly can get? And anything that doesn't fall within that 50-50 is considered a wasted vote. In other words, if you happen to vote for a politician who gets more vote than the other person, your vote was wasted. If you vote for a politician who loses, your vote was wasted. That's how they analyze this. That's in simple amazing. Words, that's what they're saying.
And they pulled that out of the air.
Right.
I mean, that's not based on anything really.
Well, in fact, they ran the efficiency measure against the Wisconsin elections since the redistricting. And every year it's a different number.
Of course it is.
Because every year the voters change their attitudes.
That's right.
They vote more or less for people, but so their efficiency measure actually isn't a static measure. It changes as the voters changes. So, you know, depending on when you apply that efficiency measure, you're going to get a different number.
That's right.
And you know, in North Carolina, a good example, in North Carolina, Republicans took over the legislature in the 2010 election. In 2010, those districts were drawn by the Democrats to keep them in power.
That's right.
You know, were basically overwhelming numbers.
Absolutely.
And it worked for most of the decade.
Sure.
And then by 2010, you know, people said no.
The voters had changed their mind.
Right. And they threw out Democrats.
And we've seen ever since 2010, the voters are changing in North Carolina. Absolutely changing. They're changing their voting patterns, and we're seeing almost a flip in the percentage of numbers who voted for Republicans in 2016 compared to who voted for Republicans in 2008. I think the numbers in 2008 were almost 52% of the people voted for Democratic legislators.
And you mean statewide?
Statewide. I'm talking in a statewide number.
Almost voted Democrat.
That's
statewide.
Right. Democrat statewide. It was flipped in 2016. Almost 52% voted for in statewide Republicans.
Right. And what they try and do is look at individual districts. And the problem with individual districts is you have individual candidates, or in some cases you have no candidates. You only have a candidate of one party.
That's right.
Or you have a weak candidate of the other party. So by saying that because someone gets 70% to 30%, it's not really a true measure. Now, some of the districts are 70-30, but it's also sometimes based on the person who's running.
Sure. And incumbency means everything. That's political too, right? That incumbent it's got a big advantage and always has.
But going back again, they held arguments yesterday on October 3rd. We're recording this on October 4th. The decision won't be made till down the road. We probably won't know this decision for several months unless they speed it up because of the 2018 elections approaching. I can't imagine that will drive them to do it. I mean, the Supreme Court has a very full calendar. Their calendar this year is probably one of their biggest number of cases in years.
Let's look at the actual justices, because it was very interesting to find out. It looks like the justices are split. Of course, we don't know. No, they've not talked to anyone. But just by perhaps, you know, knowing who they were even before they were appointed, it's split 4-4 with one supposedly vote that may be the swing vote.
And the reason he is good, so let's tell him who's on one side. On the let's call it the conservative side, which would be the side that is kind of suspicious of them wading into a political fight.
And they are. They
and
are.
That's what this is. This is a that's political right. fight, remember. If the court does this, the court will forever, if the court says you can't do this, the court will now have taken on to themselves the power to decide legislative districts.
And they will have to, because they're going to have to tell the states exactly what it'll take not to be a partisan gerrymander, or what are they calling it, extreme partisan gerrymander.
Right. And also, they have come up with another thing. So if you do it without, like, if it has to be where there's a competitive thing, to, in other words, if one the state contest. Controls, if one party controls a state, well, that's not a gerrymander. That's just what's going to happen.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, so they kind of have put some caveats when they talk. So, but on the right, let's call it, on the conservative side, you've got Gorsuch, the new justice, Alito, the Chief Justice, Roberts, and Thomas.
That's right.
I think those four are probably hesitant to wade into this, because they also recognize that it's the court's expanding judicial and federal power over state elections. Remember, all these are state elections.
That's right.
And you talked about it earlier when you said our Constitution requires the legislature to draw
right.
the district. Now, on the other side,
got
on the
Justice
liberal,
Breyer and Kagan and Sotomayor and Ginsburg.
And Ginsburg's been the most vocal, hasn't she?
Yes. Ginsburg always seems to be the most vocal.
She one of the things she said yesterday was, she said that, does this, she asked the person arguing, she said, doesn't, when this kind of redistricting happen, did it discourage people from voting?
I think that's interesting, because they're complaining now because more people are voting for Republicans. And in 10 years ago, more people were voting for Democrats. Did that discourage the Republicans in North Carolina from voting? I say no. They kept at it. I say Republicans, it's not just Republicans, and as we've seen in the voter registration statistics, people voting for Republicans, not so much the actual voters in their party, but people voting for Republicans.
So then we come down to the swing vote, and that's Justice Kennedy. And the reason he's considered a swing is, back in the mid-2000s, when another partisan redistricting case had come up, and the court refused to, you know,
hear it.
Well, they refused to call it unconstitutional. And Kennedy said, you know, if someone can show me how I can measure these in an objective manner, then I think we can do this. But he said no one had come up with a test. So that's what they
think.
That's
what they tried to do.
They think they have that test to make Kennedy happy. Look, Justice Kennedy, we've got this nice little formula for you.
That's right. And I don't know if, I don't know Justice Kennedy, but I mean, it was pretty easy to take that formula apart quickly and show that it's not static. It's not going to be the same in each election. You're going to have to look at each election for what it is, for who's running, the mood of the voters, the mood of the country or the state. That's called politics.
And that's the real difficulty in this, is that you know, they've come up with what supposedly is this formula. In the social sciences, you know, formulas and mathematical equations and everything never tend to work perfectly.
No.
And that, I'm being
no.
very kind
right.
by saying
right.
perfect. They don't tend to work well. That's why they're the social sciences. They're not the hard science. Once you come up with a formula, you sometimes cannot apply that to every single situation, because we are human.
And I'm afraid a lot of this is taking us down the path to that nonpartisan redistricting commission or committee, and I would hate to see that happen. Speaking of one of those, Iowa, the square state with all their counties being square. It's a easy way to redistrict is to go to Iowa, but they've tried to make it nonpartisan, and they always start off with, like, I think they have four congressional districts, two and two, but it always ends up being three Republicans and one Democrat after a couple of election cycles. So I don't know what Iowa's going to do, but that.
Well, it also helps that Iowa, I think you told me, was about 95% white.
At 90, really 96 or 97%.
Right. So they don't have the Voting Rights Act
no.
that in North Carolina we have, with about 23% black population, a more increasingly Hispanic population, Indians in the state. We have other complications that a state like Iowa doesn't have.
And the Voter Rights Act requires us to, well, it does now.
Yeah, it does.
To create those minority-majority districts. And so that's what we do first. We make sure that if there's a district that can be drawn with a minority, and in North Carolina the minority would be considered African Americans, they have to be drawn first, and that's what the legislature did in 2011.
And as we always say, when this legislature redistricts both on congressional level and on the state level, these districts were all approved by the Barack Obama Justice Department, headed by Eric Holder.
That's exactly right.
And the D.C. Court of Appeals also.
That's right. North Carolina courts.
Right. All of these looked at these and said they're fine. It's only been after several years and new people on the courts that they have changed to where the courts are finding them unconstitutional.
And it shows you how political the courts are now.
The legislature laid out very coherently the set of rules they followed, and it was all based on law like the Voting Rights
That's
Act.
Right.
And on court decisions, and they laid them out in order of how they had to follow them, because at each step of the way, a certain court decision informed what they could do at that point.
That's right.
And they did a very good job, and I think, you know, considering everything, they probably did the best they could.
Absolutely.
Now, politically, some people don't like the outcomes, but that's why we have elections.
That's right.
Anything else, Susan?
It's about politics.
So, well, look forward to talking to you some more after we find out more stuff. We'll be talking more election stuff and more voting things. And maybe one day we'll have a actual appointed Board of Elections and Ethics in
maybe
North Carolina.
We'll talk about that next.
All right.
Thank you to Francis and Susan for coming on the show and unpacking that topic for us and redistricting. Thank you to the listeners for tuning in for another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. And we'll catch you next time.